So this is exactly the following verses from the passage from Matthew that was read last Sunday about Peter being the rock. More likely gravel or sand than the rock, clearly, as this reading indicates. So what's the problem? What's Peter protesting? He's protesting the normal human impulse to self-preservation. I want to stay alive. I want to be who I am. I want to do what I want. I want my integrity, as I understand it, intact. And what the whole gospel is about is that my integrity consists not in me simply drawing myself into myself, which is what we all do, of course, but living in relationship to this mysterious other we call God. And that's why Peter gets so rattled. And that's why Jesus said, listen, you're thinking in normal human terms, which is that the basic fundamental human impulse is to self-preservation. And what happens if you come to believe in God is that stops being the primary value, the central axis of your life, but rather generosity. And that's the life that you have to lose in order not to become nobody, but to become a whole new person, as Paul will say, a new creature. Ready to be open to the world, to be responsive to the world, and not just to one's own interests. And it's interesting that it's Peter is involved here, because we're talking about the Petrine ministry, you know, and the church and the shape of the church. What is the shape of the church? The church, by and large, is indistinguishable from every other human institution, unhappily. I recall vividly that Irish New Yorker, the head, I kept forgotten the name of the group, Catholics for the World or something like that, who when the pedophile thing came up, said, well, if he was being interviewed with somebody from ABC, said, well, if you guys at ABC had somebody accusing you of this, you would do exactly the same thing. You would circle the wagons. God, man. If we're indistinguishable from ABC or NBC or every other human institution, we've lost. Pack it in. We're useless. The church is supposed to be unique among all the institutions on the face of this planet in that its primary goal is not self-preservation. The church is supposed to, as Jesus did, simply give up his life in the name of integrity and honesty. So the church, too, is supposed to be able to simply forfeit everything in the name of truth and goodness. And this, of course, applies to everybody in the church, including, above all, the hierarchy. The Prime Minister of Ireland, in that famous speech a few weeks back to the Irish Parliament, described the Vatican in a variety of very harsh terms, the last of which was narcissist. Narcissist. What does that mean? The myth of Narcissus was about this guy who was totally self-regarding. Nothing existed outside of his own self-regard. Okay. Now look at the rhetoric that's come out of the Vatican in regard to the pedophilia crisis. Cardinal Secretary of State says it's the bloody damn atheists and the anti-Catholic publication business that are doing this stuff to us. In other words, we're behaving just like ABC would behave if this kind of accusation were brought against them. And what we're talking about is not some kind of political strategy. What we're talking about is the very nature of God and what God is supposed to do to us. Transform us. So that we want to lose this life that does nothing but protect itself. And it is extraordinarily important that we see this in terms of the hierarchy of the church, because that's the public face of the church. Sherlock, when he was bishop here, used to regularly introduce, "I am the representative of Jesus Christ in this diocese." Rubbish! The man was dishonest. The last thing Sherlock ever said to me, called me to his office and say, "Are you undermining my authority in that community?" I'm speechless. Who in God's name do you think I am? And who in God's name do you think you are? The thing that I read from Newman last Sunday is very apposite here. This business of the centralization of the authority in the church, which was not always the case. And we were so accustomed to that. One man, one voice. But historically, that's an anomaly. The church was supposed to be a place of freedom. You know? Where people could think and speak and entered a dialogue with each other. But as Newman, in those painful words, said, "I am, you know, the Pope can sit, come down and sit on my head here in Birmingham, England, and shut me down." Without any reference to anybody else. What's at stake here is the image of God that we offer to the world. The God, I think, that we represent and symbolize is little more than an Oriental potentate demanding absolute subservience from everybody. He's not the God of mercy, not the God of love, not the God of generosity, he's not the God of Jesus Christ. That's for bloody sure. We're not talking about peripheral things, arbitrary things. We're talking about absolutely central things. Who are we to the world? Who are we to the world? If we are not God's mercy to the world, we are nothing. We're an insult to God. We're an absolute contradiction to who God is. And because the hierarchy is the most public manifestation of the church, I propose to you we are in big trouble. So Peter says, "No, Jesus, it's not going to happen to you. By God, you're not going to lose your life." Look at the response of virtually every bishop in the world to the pedophile crisis. We're protecting ourselves, our status, our bank account, our reputation. And these tens of thousands of little boys and little girls whose lives have been radically distorted are a matter of radical indifference to us. And I'm not making this up. Everybody in this room knows that, I assume. And it's still going on.
It's still going on.
So I think it is very hard. Kay Woodburn, who everybody knows, I presume, said to me a couple of weeks ago, it's the first time in my life I've ever been ashamed to be called a Catholic. And I know exactly what she means. Because we are counter-witness. We're indistinguishable from General Motors or ABC or the CBC or the Harper government or anybody else. Let me finish by reading one of the final passages in this marvelous book, Theology of Protest, that I've mentioned several times, by Bernard Herring. This is what he said. The church is a sacrament of hope, but her sacramentality is subject to divine authority, subject to God. Christ warns, for instance, in Luke, remember Lot's wife. Where the church is backward-looking, as Lot's wife was, where she yields to a security complex, where with a wrong slant toward authority, she wants to keep what cannot be kept in the name of the Lord of history, she cannot be said to be the sacrament of hope. In such cases, she needs protest. But protest from people who entrust themselves to the Lord of history. She needs protest from the ranks of the optimists. The church in need of reform does not cease to be a sacrament of hope if she is truly aware of her need for reform. If she does not simply call herself the Reformed Church, but the church in need of reform. We constantly have to distinguish carefully between what God has offered us and what we have accepted. Thus, the whole people of God have to distinguish between God's own authority, the real origin of love and fidelity, and the defective way in which we have responded to it. God remains faithful and continues to offer us remedies and punishment, but by promising a Redeemer to help us. Those parts of the church or of Christianity that appear to be mere establishments, precluding all protest against their being immobile establishments, please note, immobile establishments, have excluded themselves from the Lord of history, from the authority of freedom and the authority of hope.